Blog Talk Radio.
Now somewhere in the black mining hills of Dakota, there lived a young boy named Rocky Raccoon. And one day his woman ran off with another guy, hit young Rocky in the eye. Rocky didn't like that. He said, I'm gonna get that boy. So one day he walked into town, booked himself a room in the local saloon. Rocky Raccoon checked into his room, only to find Gideon's Bible. Rocky had come equipped with a gun to shoot off the legs of his rival. His rival, it seems, had broken his dreams by stealing the girl of his fancy. Her name was McGill, and she called herself Lil, but everyone knew her as Nancy. Now she and her man, who called himself Dan, we're in the next room at the hoedown. A Rocky burst in, and grinning a grin, he said, Danny boy, this is a showdown. But Daniel was hot, he drew fast and shot, and Rocky collapsed in the corner. Scratch, and I'll be better, Doc, as soon as I am able. And now Rocky Raccoon, he fell back in his room, only to find Gideon's Bible. Gideon checked out, and he left it no doubt. Yeah.
I would like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio. This is September the 18th, 2019. I'm your host, John Darlington. We have a special show lined up for you tonight. My guests are John and David Timmons. You can go on their website, timmonsrock.com. Tonight's show is the Timmons Brothers present the Beatles' 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. In the USA, nearly every Beatles fan did not know the album Abbey Road was the group's last album as an active band, until many years later, when stories began to indicate that the Let It Be album had been recorded earlier, but not released due to differences to the final production. With the benefit of hindsight, we now know that Abbey Road was recorded over several months from July to September of 1969, released on September 26th of 1969 in the UK, and a week later on October 3rd in 1969 in the USA. The Timmons Brothers will analyze and celebrate the 50th anniversary of the release of the album with one of the most recognizable and iconic covers, Abbey Road. John and David, welcome to the show.
Good evening, John.
Hello, John. I want to say that this album has always been one of my personal favorites, so I'm looking forward to us talking about it.
It's a good album to take your shoes off and cross the street, too. That way you can cross good. Off Abbey Road.
Hey, David Timmons, is that why I see you crossing Main Street with your shoes off?
Yes, there we go. Well, I want to bring up about Come Together you just played there. John Lennon wanted that to be Timothy Leary's campaign song for governor. And he thought... And Timothy Leary decided not to run for governor then, but that was one of his plans he was wanting to do with that. And that was amazing that John wanted to do it that way, but he must have been a supporter of Timothy Leary.
Was he the one that had the famous saying that, tune in, turn on, drop out, or it was something like that.
Yes. And I think you got that.
And I mean, he was a Harvard. He had a Harvard degree, and he taught psychology in college, and became a member of the counterculture. And I think he became good friends with Lennon, didn't he?
Yes. Hey guys, and who would ever thought John Lennon would sing about Toe Jam? That's a little bit different. That part, but it's such a. This is the first time John would take off on a Beatles album since we'd have to go clear back to '65 to the Help album where he opened up for the first song.
Well, one thing that's interesting, guys, is that he did. John Lennon did want Timothy Leary to use that, and who he was running against? He was running against Ronald Reagan. Which is pretty interesting if you think about that. And sometimes you look at rock and roll history and you think, oh, it's just a bunch of songs and it's just a bunch of long-haired freaks, you know. But the impact that these guys had on things, and I believe that Timothy Leary and his wife went up to, was it Montreal where they had the bed in, Ryoko and John? Yeah,
oh,
and
Toronto,
he went up there.
Toronto.
Was it Toronto? Went and visited them there. And so they were, you know, they were kind of in that, the LSD and expanding your mind and thinking of outside of the box and not even having a box. You know, it's like, what's a box? They were just thinking it was a freedom of thought and of expression. David, when you talked about Lennon's lyrics, I mean, I was looking into I Am a Walrus and thinking, what was going on there? Some people think that he was just trying to make people question things. And I saw you standing there. I want to hold your hand. You can figure that out. But how about this? You know,
he had his own way about doing things. I know that's why my brother John was always a big Lennon fan, weren't you, John? Because you didn't know what he was going to do next.
Yeah, that's ironic, John. You mentioned that because when David and I we had this conversation recently about. The lyrics of Come Together and how it made us both think of I Am the Walrus, because in a similar fashion he was using some kind of gibberish and some terms that just didn't make sense, and it was like, here, try to analyze this, see what you'll find.
Yeah, you know? And then let Ringo figure it out, you know. It's like, let's go to the octopus's garden. Yeah, and I love that part of it. I think, guys, when we analyze this album, we look at it, we start breaking it down tonight, we're going to see it's an incredible album. I remember listening to it for the first time, and I have to say, you know, being a big Beatles fan, I was a teenager when all this was going on, and in high school, and really into the early middle Beatles, and I kind of dropped away a little bit. But I came back when Abbey Road came out, because I loved Side 2, and I was just a big
classic
fan,
John.
And that made me think about the Beatles that I knew, the Beatles that were turning things upside down, the Beatles that were doing, you know, it's incredible to think about this, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, and I might be wrong, I'm not sure. I don't think Paul McCartney could read music.
That's what I've been told, and that's what I've
same
read.
Thing for me, guys. He just had a ear for how to pick up on the melodies and stuff. That's true.
And how about Lennon? Was he the same way?
I don't know about John, because I don't hear as much about that part. I want to say yes, but I don't know with all certainty.
You know, the one that really could was George Harrison, guys. That was the one that could read music, was George.
Well, think about this for a second, David. Think about this, okay? So you've got a guy that Paul McCartney is writing music yesterday, songs that will never be forgotten, that are some of the most iconic songs ever written, period, that couldn't sit down and read music. How do you explain that? Isn't that like somebody writing a book that can't read?
It would be like an Albert Einstein without knowing the theory of relativity, basically. But Paul was given this gift, and you can hear it yet today with him. He just can come up with lyrics so quickly, and I think that's what made him work so good with Lennon, because Lennon could bring out some strange words and stuff, and he could work them together. But you think of famous songwriting teams, I think that's why the Beatles had an advantage over the Rolling Stones, because the Jagger Richard team was a writing team, but they never really can match what the Beatles do. And I'm probably going to have some Rolling Stones throw some stones at fans, but the bad difference is the only two I could compare them with, probably talent we have writing songs, would probably be the Ray and Dave Davies of the Kinks with the songwriting ability. That would be my comparison. What do you guys think?
Go ahead, John.
Well, if we're talking just in general terms of writing ability, I think Lennon McCartney is in a class unto itself. The fact that as far as we know, neither one could read music and think how many classics. I think I heard Paul McCartney say in an interview. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean he recorded that many, but he estimated that him and John were given credit as Lennon McCartney for writing up to 400 songs. Now,
yeah, that sounds
a lot of
right.
Them, you know, which is incredible to me. You know, and the class I teach, the textbook is the authors have selected what they think are the 100 best Beatles songs, and I often remind my class that this is just 100 of the songs. I said they recorded over 200 some, so that means more than half of them are not even being mentioned in the book, and we're talking. Many of them written by Lennon McCartney. What a fantastic catalog for two people to put together in essentially no more than 10-year period.
Oh, yeah. You think about Abbey Road was in 1969, right? And in 1962 and 3, think what they were writing, the style of music they were writing at the level. And they grew into this. They matured and just blossomed into this incredible writing team. I totally agree with both of you. I always liked the Kinks too, David, but I'm one of these guys, when I listen to them, I don't think the Kinks would have been where they were without the Beatles. I don't think the Stones would have been where they were without the Beatles.
I agree
with
you, John.
It was one of these incredible things where, like, you listen to a McCartney song and you like listen to Rocky Raccoon or one of the songs like what we played earlier, and you hear the simplicity of that, the storytelling of that, you're just captivated by it. You're listening to it like it's a story, like it's somebody you know. And that's pretty incredible. When I heard Yesterday for the first time, I think I was just like, I had to stop and think, who wrote that song? How did he do that? You know, and David, you hit it. He's just had a gift. And it wasn't manufactured. It was just something that he had, and he was able to share it with everybody. And
the first song,
I think,
John, I've noticed about this, about their songwriting on Rubber Soul, and I always mention this to John, was Norwegian Wood. That was totally off of everything with what was going on at the time with all the British invasion, and that's that songwriting billing like you guys brought up, and amazing.
Yeah, and I love that song too, David, because it has an atmosphere to it. It takes you into that little cottage that John Lennon was in with this lady, and you're right there with them. And it's like, oh my gosh. And then it's like, isn't this good? Norwegian Wood. I'm going to burn a fire. If she's going off, I'm just going to sit here and relax. And it's just incredible how they could do this. Now let's connect this in. Let's draw this into Abbey Road. Like you said in the opening that I read, John, that a lot of people didn't realize, and I was one of those people, that Abbey Road was their finale, and that they kind of knew that. And then the other album came out after that, Let It Be. And then there was a compilation album, Hey Jude, that came out after that, which I thought that was a good album, but it was, you know, like put together. What do you think?
Kind of like Greatest Hits. It was kind of
I think it was B-sides, and it was singles that were not on an album. So that's that was. So, but I mean, can you find any better songs to put on an album than that? It's like,
exactly.
Oh my good.
Hey, John, what makes it so amazing to me, at the time we're getting ready to work on Abbey Road, they already been on each other's throats during the Let It Be sessions, and it's just amazing what with all the things going on, when they got to the studio, they forgot about the business dealings. They forgot all that stuff. And there's what all of us guys know. They went to their musical talents, the pressure of that. When they was together in the studio, it was amazing what they could do. And how I found out this is the last album, my brother John will tell you this, I bought a Marvel comic book called The History of the Beatles, isn't it, John?
Yep.
And it said that they was working on which shocked me. Abbey Road would be the album, and they had put Let It Be in the can because nobody else knew about Let It Be besides the Beatles, and that's how I first learned about it when I was a kid. So I basically got about the way it was.
In that Marvel comic, when I first saw it, I said to David, I said, they've made a terrible mistake here. How can somebody not catch it? You know, I said, they make it sound like Let It Be was already done. Now they're going to the studio to record Abbey Road. And I was like, there's something wrong. And that was my first hint that, wait a minute, because the order we were used to in America and what we saw. And, of course, the movie would not come out until, you know, what, middle of 1970, I believe, you know. So a lot of these circumstances, news didn't travel as quick back then, but we did not know about all the bickering that went on just several months in early part of 69. We were making on Let It Be. We only knew there was a movie being made, but it wasn't like there was you know, somebody getting as far as bootleg copies of it and sending it out. I'm not saying there wasn't any bootleg copies, but hardly anybody had access to it. So we really didn't know what was the ambiance, what was the atmosphere, what was the relationship between the four members of the Beatles. And now looking back, we realize there was so much bickering and so much controversy and tension during the Let It Be sessions, mainly January, February, March of 69. And I think that's important to recognize that setting, because I think none of them were happy with what they came up with. And they knew it was getting toward the end, and they didn't feel like that was the way they wanted to end the Beatles with that on that kind of note. And I think that's why they, if we can use a sort of a cliche here, they put down their egos and like, let's actually get along, let's make an album with George Martin, bring him back, even though John pretty much ran him out of the studio during Let It Be. In fact, when Paul contacts George Martin about, hey, we want to do another album, we want you involved, and Martin's first reaction was, well, you know, he was fine with it, but he said only if you will let me do the production the way we used to. And Paul, oh, yeah, we will. And here was George Martin's response, though, with a sense of trepidation, John included, because he was like, if John's going to go through the bickering and I'm not going to do this and not be willing to go along with the team, George Martin did not want to be involved again. And lo and behold, George Martin calls it a very happy record. That's the way he described Abbey Road.
When did Phil Spector get involved in did he do Let It Be?
He did Let It Be, and he really worked mainly with John Lennon on that, much to Paul McCartney's dismay. I mean, Lennon was really the ally of Phil Spector, and John was. It's really strange because they went into making the album to get back to the roots of rock and roll, and John at the time hated production, but yet he didn't like the way it sounded. So who does he get? The person with the with the walls of sound and brings in extra production than Phil Spector.
And then you can see the difference in you guys, and you can see the difference in albums. I imagine, but you both in your collections have Let It Be Naked. That is the one Paul McCartney put out later, the way he wanted to do it. And that was one of the first big bickerings between Paul and John too, wasn't it? Where he got. But then Phil Spector had this wall of sound that he wanted. But I still like the Let It Be Naked, Let It Be compared with the Let It Be that Phil Spector did. I guess everybody has their own opinion.
I would have to sit down and listen to him. David, I haven't done that, but that's a really good idea to just listen to the album as it was released originally, and then listen to it, you know, as it was Let It Be Naked, where he takes all the production out and just lets the instruments kind of talk for themselves. The tracks that I've heard I really like. Is it Long and Winding Road on that?
Yes, you're correct. And if you listen to that one, now John will disagree with my brother John. He likes the one Phil Spector did, but well, I tell you, the one I like, their version of what they do for Long and Winding Road with the guitar solo in it. And then if you listen to it, there's a couple of one after 909 captures that early Beatle theme to me so much better than the way Phil Spector had them do it. So I guess you'd have to give it a listen and really judge for yourself, really, yes.
It's definitely interesting. Now, let's look at the flow of things. Okay, so you had the White Album, which, you know, they called the Beatles, and you had those incredible albums. Music came out, blew everyone's mind, still does. Then you go into the Let It Be sessions. Then talk about how the time frame between the White Album, excuse me, what was the time frame between the lapse?
Between the time frame, they did take, and my brother John, I'm right on this. I believe they did take some time out to work on four songs for Yellow Submarine in between time, right, John?
That's right.
For the movie?
That's right. Yeah.
And so they took, Hey Bulldog was, they had only four originals. I want to say one was Hey Bulldog, All Together Now. And the Hey Bulldog, they really wanted to put in as a single, and then they changed their mind, which I thought would have been a great single.
Oh, it's
and
a
I'm
great song.
I remember, and Way Too Much, and George Harrison contributed two out of the four songs, and the other one would have been on Sgt. Pepper, Only a Northern Song. And then I think that's when they go right into it. Am I correct on this now? I think they go right into Let It Be after that.
That sounds right. That sounds the calendar, because the famous on the rooftop performance was January 30, 1969, and they had to put those songs together before that, I believe, so they could be included in the Yellow Submarine soundtrack.
Although,
let me take that back. Some of those songs, I think, Dave, might have been made right before they went to India.
You're right, because Lady Madonna, they needed to have a single, and that's why they made Lady Madonna, and of course they had to come. They're the only group who could come up with a single in a hurry and come up with a hit with it too. That's what I remember. Yeah, you're correct.
Yeah, I think the more I think about it, they might have worked on those songs for Yellow Submarine right before they went to India, but they might have done some filming for the movie.
Yes.
right before it was released, if memory serves me correctly.
So when was Yellow Submarine, what was its release date?
I'm thinking, John, I could be wrong, but I was thinking like December 68, January of 69, but I'm not absolutely for sure because I don't
November
have it right in front of me right now.
November,
oh, was it? Okay,
68.
Thank you. Thank
November
you.
November 68. Because I remember buying, there was a gold, here I go back to comic books, I should have bought it. Gold Key put out the Yellow Submarine comic book for a quarter, and I should have got it. Now that book brings $100. And it had the cartoon cover on it. And lo and behold, that's hindsight with me sometimes. But so I know it's about November 68.
Was that here in Mount Sterling, David? Did you see it at the where did you get your comic books?
At the pharmacy downtown. It used to be downtown. Yeah. And John remembers this well. I even pick it up and look at it twice, don't I, John?
Oh, yeah, he does. He does.
And I said, well, I'll get it later on.
Yeah, that's
and that later on never
famous
happened.
Last word.
Yes,
oh yeah, it's
yes.
Absolutely.
I don't want to digress too much from the topic, Abbey Road, but I do want to make this comment. That comic book probably came out about the same time as the movie, I believe, November '68. And I just got to share with you, for my listeners out there, anybody collects Hot Wheels, that's when I bought my first Hot Wheels, November '68, the first Red Line series.
All right.
and you know you're getting older when they have a 50th anniversary edition and you bought the original.
Yeah. It's kind of cool, though, isn't it?
It's
pretty awesome. Yeah, when you see things like that. And I said that, David, because in West Jefferson, I would go to Malott's Drugstore, and they had the stand that was just spin around. It was like you'd had all the – you would have the comic books on it, and they would sit and spin it around, and you would just sit there for hours and hours and look at comic
them.
Books.
Yes.
Yeah, they would run me out because I would read one, put it in, read another one, and it was like, come on, buy something. But that's a really good memory, David. That would have been cool to get that. But I think we all have that same those stories, you know, where
if we
would have known what we know now, we would have bought all that stuff up and.
Oh,
be rich,
hey, John, but. I'd been retired in Hawaii if I got half the stuff I should have.
Well, let's play a song, and I want to play something, and I want you guys to talk about that because that's. That's George Harrison. That's an incredible song. That's something. When I think about the Beatles, and we could talk about what you think the Beatles would have been without George. Where would they be? What I mean, their songs were Lennon and McCartney, and they had plenty of those, right? So they could have made that. But where did he come in to make them what they were? And then you look at these incredible songs that he wrote. You talked about those songs, David, off of Yellow Submarine. It's All Too Much. That's an incredible song.
Well, it's a good song. I love it.
It's a trippy song. But talk about something.
You know, something for me was George Harrison's coming out. He had never got to do an A-side, and they had no idea how big this song, I think. Well, James Taylor had a small in 68 at Apple, and he heard what James' first words about something in the way she moved. I got George thinking about it when James Taylor's famous Apple album he made. And, of course, George Harrison played in them sessions. And this is where George finally showed his talent. I think John and Paul wanted to keep him so far back. He was very talented in his own right, which proved on Big White. But as far as they was for, that was John and Paul's show. And you guys you guys will follow us, but George showed his writing ability and talent there. And to me, it's one of the most recorded songs right behind Yesterday by a lot of different artists. Even Engelbert Humperdinck made a version of it. And when Engelbert makes a version of something, but it's the same thing. Well, I'll let John talk here.
Well, I'm going to give Dave an opportunity because he's one that made me aware of this involving something. Why don't you talk about Joe Cocker, Dave, and
Joe Cocker, something. Joe
Cocker
first recorded before George Harrison. George Harrison wasn't too sure because he originally wrote it during the Let It Be session. Well, Joe Cocker needed a ballot. If you buy Joe Cocker's one of his early albums, he does a version of Something. And on the same album, he does She Came In Through the Bathroom Window. And it's amazing. It reminds me when Jimi Hendrix did Sgt. Pepper 3 days after the album came out. Yeah. But George Harrison wants to see how he thought Joe Cocker's voice was made for that song. So that's a little inside bit I found out through an English import magazine.
I just thought that was rather fascinating because I'd overlooked that, and it's from the album called Joe Cocker with the exclamation point. So to think that, you know, this classic song Something was actually not only recorded but released out there before the Beatles did it with their own Something, and that to me is just rather interesting. And I was listening to an interview recently on the internet with John Lennon, and I don't remember who was the reporter interviewing him, but it was done like within days after Abbey Road had been released in the UK in September of '69, and at that time they were going through the album, kind of introducing it to people, and they'd play a little bit of each song, and Lennon was there and he was talking about it, and the person just assumed, he goes, well, I see that Come Together is the first song on side one, so that's probably going to be the A side hit. And Lennon said, actually not. He said the song that is going to be the A side, and it deserves so because George has written a classic, is Something. So to hear John talk about it right there within days of it being released, talking about it with such kind of an admiration and respect, it was like he said that he started talking about George as a songwriter, and he said, yeah, George has really found his groove here in the last couple albums, and he just keeps coming up with more and more songs.
I love that. That's just perfect. It, because you think about how incredible All Things Must Pass is one of my favorite albums of all time, and I think that I listen to that and I hear something new and fresh in it all the time. And that was just George saying, guys, you can, you know, have all your songs, but give me a shot. And as you're going to see on this song, Something, it's one of the most beautiful songs ever written. Like David, like you said, so many people did that because I would imagine they came and said, what do you think of this song? Oh, yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that song. That's a great song.
It's a classic. It's a classic.
Well, we'll play that, but and we'll be back. Yeah, go ahead, John.
I was going to make one more comment, but when you bought Abbey Road and played Side One, I think even Apple assumed Come Together was going to be the main song. Now, it ended up being a double-sided 45 hit. I want to point that out. If people don't know that, they're thinking, well, my gosh, why do I know Come Together? But I think they assumed it was going to be the major song, too, and that's why they made it the first song on Side One, followed by Something. And I think if Lennon had his way, he would have had the album open probably with Something.
Well, let's open with Something. My guests tonight, John and David Timmons, were talking about the Beatles' 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. You can go to the Timmons website, with Timmons Brothers' website. It's timmonsrock.com. And we really appreciate you guys being on and sharing your knowledge of rock and roll with us through the years. And we look for many more years to come. And let's play This Is Something by the Beatles, and we'll be right back after this.
Now, no, I believe in how. to be under the sea, in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been, in his octopus's garden in the shade. I'd ask my friends to come and see in the shade. We would be warm below the storm in our little hideaway beneath the waves, resting our heads on the seabed in an octopus's garden near a cave. We would sing and dance around, because we know we can't be found. I'd like to be under the sea, in an octopus's garden in the shade. About the coral that lies beneath the waves. Oh, what joy for every girl and boy, knowing they're happy and they're safe. We would be so happy, you and me, no one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be
And we're back on John Talk Radio. You're listening to Independent Music Showcase. We do this every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, and our special show tonight will go till 9:30. We have John and David Timmons with us, and we're talking about the Beatles' Abbey Road album and its 50th anniversary. We do have a caller, and let's see. Caller, do you have a question for John or David?
Hi.
Hi. And who is this?
I want to say, pardon?
And who is this?
Oh, I'm Sherry.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Sherry, how are you, Sherry?
Guy, JT and David.
It's good hearing you.
Yeah,
good hearing,
hearing you too. Yes, long time no there. Yes.
I know.
And then, good hearing your voice.
Are you still up in Michigan?
It's good hearing you too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I assume you're still up in Michigan, right?
Yes, I'm still in Michigan.
Okay, okay. Yeah, well,
we won't hold that against you, Sherry.
Oh, no. No, I like Ohio, too.
That's good.
Sherry's very loyal to the Timmons Brothers Rock and Roll Trivia Show. I got to say that there.
That's awesome. Do you have, something you'd like to share, Sherry, with the Abbey Road album?
I enjoy all of the Beatles' music. I'm, you know, a girl of the 60s and the 70s. So I have enjoyed, you know, all the different kinds of music that came out. And I have been a Beatles fan, you know. And I have been to John and Dave's trivia, music trivia on campus. And I have enjoyed it. And the show tonight is just excellent. And I'm so surprised that I got through your call.
Well, we
I'm
really
glad
are glad you,
got you
did.
Cherry. Hey, Cherry, all them years you listened, they would only be 35 years old is something.
Well, thank you.
you've been a good friend to me for a long time, Jerry. But you're right. The Beatle music this has, no matter what album you listen to, and both the other guys will agree with me, there's not a Beatle album. Most groups will make one crummy album you don't like. The Beatles never had that. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah, they were.
Sherry, I got to ask you, where does the song Something stand in your list of Beatles songs? Is that one of your favorites?
Yes, it is.
What a great love song, a ballad. And it was in, and George Harrison never got his credit due. I know one time I'm watching a TV show and it's Frank Sinatra singing, and he's saying, it's Old Blue Eyes, now I'd like to do a Lennon McCartney written tune, Something. And I'm like, poor George, yeah. He wrote the song, and even Frank Sinatra says Lennon McCartney.
And you know, Sherry, anytime Engelbert Humperdinck records a song, that's Something.
Everybody liked, you know, Paul McCartney and Ringo, but I like George. I like George. I thought he was cool looking. I liked him. And when he did sang, you know, by himself, when they broke up and they all went their separate ways, and he did a couple of songs, and I enjoyed them. I really did.
Yeah, me too. I loved his solo work, and even when he like the Traveling Wilburys is really good stuff. And
yes,
his son,
yes.
I don't know if you have heard Danny, his son Danny Harrison. He sounds just like him, and he looks just like him, which I think is a good thing and a bad thing.
Yes.
Probably not that great for Danny, but you have to stand up on your own. But I mean, just look and sound like your dad, I guess, is pretty cool. But I really do agree with you when you hear songs like Something and Here Comes the Sun and all these different songs that are just mind-blowing songs. And you think about, like John and David have said before on the show, George just kind of stood back and played his guitars. You know, okay, this is what you want me to do. I'm cool with that. But all that time, all this music was building up in him, and his talent and his songwriting ability was just, he couldn't hold it in anymore. It was just incredible.
Yeah, he was incredible.
I got to ask you this question, Sherry. Do you think in the Timmons Brothers, I'm the George Harrison of them? I'm counting John.
No, you're the Ringo.
Well, Dave, you know, I love you and JT a lot, but I have to say, JT's my favorite.
I figured. He's the Paul McCartney of the two.
And there goes David. And David back in his octopus's garden in the shade.
Yeah.
Sherry, before you go, I'm going to go down memory lane here. And it involves music. The first time you saw a Timmons Brothers Rock and Roll Trivia Show, Dave and I, we embarrassed you when we sang the famous Four Seasons song, Sherry, Sherry Baby. Won't you come
you
out
did.
Tonight?
Yes, you did.
I love that song.
I do, too.
And,
yeah, hey,
and whenever I hear that song
it,
anymore,
I
Sherry, I always think of you.
When anybody starts singing that song, I think of you too.
Can any of you guys, can you hit Frankie Valli's high note on that song?
Not in a million years.
I did that tonight. I came out and sung it. I was very close, wasn't I? Well, as close as Johnny Cash.
Okay.
Well, as close as Johnny Cash could get to it.
Oh, that's cool. That's a great, great one there. But, Sherry, we really appreciate you calling in. And we're just going to talk. You can hang out with us if you want to. Yeah. One thing I want to talk about, guys, is we played Octopus's Garden. And Ringo has his own sound. There is nothing that sounds like – no one sounds like Ringo. And I wonder at when the Beatles were still – I mean, he did Boys on one of their earlier albums. And – I love it. What do you think they thought of that? Do you guys know that, what they thought of Ghost Voice and what they thought of him getting on a record? Were they for it? Were
Ringo
they thinking,
Ringo was a big Carl Perkins fan, and that, long before he was a Beatle. And so I could see him doing this stuff. But I got to bring this up about Octopus's Garden. That was one of the few Beatles songs that Captain Kangaroo actually played on his TV show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's one of the inside notes.
Wow.
But I want to say, but I want to say with Ringo, Ringo was the most loved by the other three. And when you heard this song, they were all happy when they were recording this. And Ringo, and I think John will say this best, Ringo brought the other three together even when they was mad at each other, wouldn't he, John?
He was the peacemaker. He was the one that, even when there was tension and there was conflict, Ringo, as you see, he was lovable Ringo. He had this way that he could bring them together, and I think that's why he was so important to the Beatles, that I'm not sure they would have been a group as long as they were if they did not have Ringo there in the band.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Have you seen Ringo Starr in his All-Star Band? Has anybody seen it?
I have in 1989. I did. It was one of the first ones he had put together.
Mark Farner was with him that time, wasn't he, John?
No, 89. It was most of them have passed away, believe it or not, that I saw.
Right.
It was
Levon Helm.
It was Levon Helm and Rick Danko from the band, Billy Preston. There was Dr. John.
Man, that's a good lineup.
What a lineup.
Yeah,
Hey, guys,
Joe
I got to get my Mott the Hoople moment.
Joe Walsh.
Ian Hunter toured with him, too. Did you guys know that? Ian Hunter did tour with him.
Oh, wow, no.
Yes, he did. Jerry knows I push Mott the Hoople all the time anyway.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've seen Ringo's band twice, and it's like he does Octopus's Garden, and it's just so, the whole show is so optimistic and uplifting, and it's incredible. You leave the show just feeling so good. So you really nailed that, John, when you said he brought them together, and when things were kind of, I mean, Lennon went to some dark spots, man. He went to some dark places, and McCartney had his times, too. He was very busy with his family and everything going on. And Ringo just seemed to be, you know, the musician's musician, do his job, keep that incredible rhythm going, keeping the band together. And I just think we should, you know, I wanted to play that. It's one of the songs John gave me, but I wanted to play it to give him credit for this album because
Hey, guys, can I bring this one thing up? How many have watched? I brought this story up before. It's one of the Simpsons, and Homer's looking in the window, and it's all for the cartoon Beatles. And Ringo says, "I got another song, Paul, John. I want you to listen to it." And Paul says, "Okay, Ringo, we'll put it on the refrigerator beside the other, and we'll get to it tomorrow."
Poor Ringo. Yeah, that's probably how he felt. So I guess as we're moving on, John, what else would you like to say? We're going to take a music break here in about 7 minutes and play a couple more songs. But what do you want the listeners to know about Abbey Road that maybe has been under the rug and people don't know that much about it? What are some of the things that you would like for the listeners to know about it?
Well, I think that I want to talk about the album cover and some things that people may not know about the album cover because it is probably one of the most recognizable, iconic covers ever. I mean, to this day, you'll see people wearing T-shirts. You'll see on books. It has just become one of the most used as far as any of a representation of the Beatles. And we think of Abbey Road. We think of that walking across that classic road and having that look. What's really ironic, none of this would have happened because they were really having problems coming up with the name of the album, and they were really leaning toward calling it Everest. And like, Everest, why Everest? Like the mountain, Mount Everest? Well, what it was, Jeff Emmerich, who was the engineer for Abbey Road at the time, he was a heavy smoker, and he was always leaving his packs laying around of Everest, so they were so used to seeing it during the Abbey Road sessions, they were really leaning on calling it Everest. And it wasn't until Paul just one day, just out of the blue, says, "I've got it." He goes, "We're right here in the studio. It's Abbey Road. Why don't we just call it Abbey Road?" And that led to the picture session. I think the gentleman's name was, I believe, Ian McLean, I believe, was the photographer. He took probably about 4 or 6 shots in different poses, and then they got it just right, the classic pose. And I don't think they were, like, doing this intentionally that Paul was out of step, but he was. He was barefoot. And there's so much symbolism. It's been often documented with Lennon wearing the all-white, representing heaven, Christ. Then you had the Undertaker in the three-piece suit, the pinstripe suit with Ringo. And then Paul is the third one. He's barefoot. He's out of step. And in some cultures, if you're out of step with others and you're barefoot, that's a sign of a corpse. And then behind him is George wearing a flannel shirt and blue jeans being the gravedigger. And this was going on with that big rumor that Paul is dead. Now, one of them that doesn't hold up, though, I think I'm right on this, on the license plate it says if 28. But in 1969, when they were recording, Paul had just been turning 27. So I don't know where that part comes in, but I believe that's what the license plate says. And so I don't know if it was orchestrated, but even if it was or was not, what a great a look. It's clean, it's simple, but a fantastic picture of the band, and it is the band. And it would be the last time we would see the band together in a picture, because when Let It Be came out, you had these 4 rectangles of just separate pictures. And I think that's what makes it so meaningful. And by that point, they don't even put the name Beatles on the album. It's just a picture, but people knew.
To me,
yeah, it's an iconic symbol for Abbey Road. It's a giraffe. It is.
Now, my point, that Jerry, you probably agree with this. The songs on Abbey Road are so strong for being mad at each other, and what's made to me the probably their best songwriting they had for a long time, and like I said, this amazed me, and that's one of my favorite all-time album covers, next to Sgt. Pepper. But one day I want to own the Butcher cover, but I'll never be rich enough to buy it. But I like to have it.
You might get it someday, David. Just keep looking, man, at a garage
sale. That's true.
Yeah, there you go.
That's true.
So we've got this incredible album cover that it's like it's simple. It's nothing fancy. Like you said, John, but it just, like, I think the photography, the picture stands out so beautifully. It's done so well. Do you know who did the photography? Did you mention that?
Yes, I think the gentleman's name, I might be mispronouncing it, but I think it's looks like it's pronounced E-A-N, not Ian, like Ian Hunter. Okay, Dave, I did it for you. I mentioned Ian Hunter.
Thank you.
E-A-N McMillan, and he took six photos, and then when you see the behind-the-scenes photos, those were done by Paul's wife. That was by Linda McCartney.
Yeah, and she was
like
a photographer.
Where she did the pictures when they're sitting on the steps waiting to pose for it, and then shows there's a lady, an older lady comes out of the blue out of nowhere helping John get his lapel fixed, and it's a famous picture now, and it's like John's posing, like letting her, he doesn't even know this woman, I guess, and she's like, well, you need to look a little better there, you're going to be in a picture, you know?
Yeah, you got to be in this big picture, you have to have your collar straight, buddy. What's going on? Yeah, but
John,
if
I can make one more comment, I saw this on 60 Minutes when they were interviewing Paul McCartney this year, and they were showing Paul McCartney photos, and one of them was they're sitting at the Abbey Road sessions waiting to decide when they're going to cross the street, and Paul looked at it, he goes, oh yeah, I remember this. He said, I had been told by one of our managers or somebody that was one of their business partners, I don't know who, so I don't want to say for sure, but they were saying that we don't think John knows that a lot of his income is going to be taxable, and he's going to have to be taxed on it. And he said, when I look at that picture, that's a look on my face saying, how am I going to tell John this?
Well, you guys,
it's time for me to get off here.
Well, thank you,
but
Sherry.
I want to say I've enjoyed the show, and JT and David, miss you a whole bunches.
Oh, Jerry,
we miss you.
I always think about, and you take good care of yourself, and God bless you. You take care.
You guys too. God bless.
Bye now.
Thanks, Jerry. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Okay,
guys.
So
bye.
Bye, sir.
We're going to take a music break. We're going to play
good.
A couple songs.
Listen to some more.
Yeah, and we will be right back after this.
Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right. It's dawning, it's speed up.
And you're back on John Talk Radio. My guests are John and David Timmons, and we're talking about the great Abbey Road album. It's 50th anniversary. We're talking about it. You can visit the Timmons Brothers website on timmonsrock.com. And always remember this, John and David, she could steal, but she could not rob.
Hey, John, I got to bring up the story behind this song. In 1966, Paul McCartney had a small house in London, and he left the bathroom window open. One of his fans crawled through the bathroom window to take his picture, and he came up with this song. That's how it really came about, this song, because she did come through the bathroom window. It was a Paul. I read about in Paul's biography, and that was very interesting. And he said, what was amazing? He said it was a two-story house, and she had to climb the rose. What do they call that? To get through the bathroom window. Very dedicated Beatle fan.
I'm telling you.
Wow.
So, Mr. John Timmons, we're at the end of the. Of the show, we're getting there. We got a little under a half an hour left, and we want to talk. I mean, we talked about the album cover. We talked about the mystery of the album kind of coming out, and people thought it wasn't the last album. That turned out to be the last. What does this album mean in Beatles history to you?
I guess my meaning changed when I found out it was actually the last time as a group. As an active band, they were making songs because for many years I thought it was Let It Be, and I thought, what a way to end a group with the song Long and Winding Road. It's like it's been a long and winding road. And that was always my thought. And as Dave stated earlier, you know, when I first got a hint of that may not be the case with that Marvel Beatles special comic book. And then I started reading more, you know, things kind of showing timeline. I'm like, oh, well, that it really makes me listen to it differently. And I guess I always did think it was a fine album, and I enjoyed it. But in some ways, now when you go back and listen to it, it's kind of melancholy that when you have that medley at the end, and you know they're all working together, and they had never done solos in the same song together where each one took a chance in Carry That Weight, where John did a little bit, Paul did a little bit, George a little bit, and then even to a Ringo, he did his drum solo, although it was reluctant, he wasn't crazy about it. They talked him into it, so everybody had a solo. And what a way to end your last songs with, and of course, again, we didn't know it, but with the song The End, and then all this time where you hear nothing, and you've already taken off the turntable, and it's like, what, another song? And then you're hearing this Her Majesty, you know? And it was just, the first time I ever heard it, I was like, I wonder if that's supposed to be on there, you know?
I remember the same thing. And it's one of those things where, do you think they thought it was their last time?
We know, I'll let Dave respond, but my quick answer on that is Ringo in the anthology special, he made a comment. He goes, nobody said anything, but we knew. He said, it wasn't like we were looking at each other. This will be the last time we're ever around the old mic. This will be the last time we're ever standing side by side. This will be the last. He goes, it wasn't like we were all, you know, being sad and melancholy about the moment. But he said it was unspoken, but we kind of knew this is it.
What do you think, David?
And this is my opinion, too, and John hit it on the head. I think they wanted to go out the way they started, and it was so amazing. Here they are. They're all going different directions that time, but I think, and just like they told George Martin, Paul did, he said, let's do this the way we always did this, and nobody had no idea what was this going to be, but it's just so amazing that a group that had so many problems with counting what they couldn't agree on this and that, but then when it came down to the end, they, like talented musicians and great artists, they went out the way they came in as great artists. And that's the way I look at it, because it's just amazing to me of everything going on, and John doing that bed piece, and Paul wanting to go back to his little farm in Scotland. But they were still unified when it came musically. Their love for music and the love for each other as brothers, even brothers will get mad at each other, but the point of it is they were able to overcome that. And what a farewell album that was. And we didn't know at the time.
Yeah, I didn't either. What part do you think, and we haven't mentioned Yoko Ono in this show at all, but that was John Lennon. He got a lot of flack for that, and he got a people, you know, have always said that Yoko broke up the Beatles, and then he brought her everywhere. But I was reading something recently about it, guys, and that was the love of his life, and you got to kind of respect that. I mean, he had gone up and down and had a lot of weird things in his life and relationships and problems with different things, but Yoko was his anchor, and he felt safe around her, and he felt that was who brought him the peace, and that he couldn't find in anybody else. Do you think she gets a lot of flack and some negative press? Do you think she deserves that, or do you think we need to kind of look at it a little bit like I just described?
Well, I don't know if you ever watched The Family Guy. The Family Guy blames Yoko. No. Here's my opinion, John. You're right. John Lennon had a lot of outside things, and I think when he first met her at that art fair, and he could feel that there's certain attractions, and the attraction was there for both of them. And I think it did help unify with John's life. But I think, on the other hand, though, when the Beatles was in the studio, that was like the Three Musketeers. Nobody else was there. And I think that, I ain't going to say she was fault at this, but I did think it brought up the first tension they had when she first came there. Because if you remember, John Lennon was in a car accident, and he was healing up when they got ready to make this album. And when he healed up, he made Yoko had a bed brought in. He had a bed for her with a microphone so she could make comments. And but like I said, sometimes in history, though, some people just get bad press. Maybe Yoko did.
Well, I know she was very present in the Let It Be sessions. I mean, that's, you know, sitting there and all that. How about the Abbey Road sessions? Was she involved in that? Was she in the studio there?
Oh, yeah, she was there. I think the main difference was that they were so upset during Let It Be sessions that they thought John would finally come around and not bring her, and he kept on bringing her. And I think when they went into Abbey Road sessions, it's like, okay, John's out
he's
there.
He's bringing her.
No matter what we say, what we do, he's going to do what
her.
He wants. And, you know, she's there, but in our mind, she's invisible. Let's go ahead and do our work, and we won't even mention her, but we will acknowledge her. We won't mistreat her. And I think that's why it made it a happier atmosphere when they did the Abbey Road.
Well, Belinda was there, too, taking the pictures. I think they had to compromise. And I think that came, yeah. So she was there, yeah.
Go ahead, Dave.
And I want to bring this up. I think it was a compromise of both, and I think too. And you guys both brought it up. I think too, Paul and John's relationship. And I heard Paul on a talk show not too long ago, and he said, "Yeah," he said, "the press made it a lot bigger," but he said John and I were friends. He said, "Yeah, we get mad at each other, but." Who doesn't have a little time? Sometimes you're working with somebody so close, and your relationship sometimes can be that way, and sometimes I think the press made it a lot bigger than I think it was, because Paul and John kept in contact with each other long after the breakup of the Beatles. Because one of my favorite comments, and I think John, you brought this up one time, when George Harrison was putting together Bangladesh. And John found out. John didn't want to do it, but he wrote a letter to Paul. He said, "Paul, you better not let George down. You should have been there." But that's what. But John, but I think you guys put it on the head. I think they wanted to go out, and they let even the wife thing was not going to do with their wives. And I just think it was just something they know these are going to do.
The comment I was going to make about the wives. If you remember, of course, the Beatles aren't touring by this point, and so they need to, and are not appearing even on TV shows anymore, so they, we didn't call them videos, but they would do these promotional films and send them like the Ed Sullivan Show or the Red Skelton Show, any kind of a variety program. And I remember the first time I saw the video, the film for something, promotional film, I thought it was so unusual. Because it's the only film that I know of that all four of them have their spouses playing a prominent role in the video, where it shows each one. I don't remember he even shows all four of the Beatles together. It's each time it's like it's George and Patty, or it's John Yoko, or it's Paul and Linda, different scenes. And, you know, of course, you got the love song playing something in the background. But I thought to myself, okay, it's kind of accepting. We're older now. We're married. We're not free, young, you know, type of bachelors anymore. And this is who we are. And let's put it out there on the film.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, we watched them grow up, and that's one of the things of fame. You know, you think it's a great thing. Everybody thinks they want it, but do you really want it? Do you want that? You know, I mean, Lennon, it got really to him because he just wanted to walk down the street. He wanted to be able to just have a nice day with his family and not be mobbed and not be, treated like some god or something. He didn't want that. And I'm sure at the beginning, guys, they probably thought it was pretty awesome. And I mean, when you're coming from obscurity to stardom, but after a while, you know, all you really want is your peace and to enjoy your life. And do you think that had something to do with it? I mean, it was all just too much. And kind of goes back to George Harrison's song.
You know, with George Harrison, George, and like I said, George was the quiet one all the time and stuff, but I think with all four of them, fame, when it did come, and people don't realize this about the Beatles, when they first came to the United States, they were not for sure if they was going to make it or not, and because they were a big follower of Cliff Richard. And when they saw what Cliff Richard couldn't do in 62, Paul and John, they said John was actually sick in his stomach flying over here because even though they had the number one hit, they didn't realize they came off that plane. And, J.D., you said this best. They were young boys when they came off that plane, but when they crossed that street at Abbey Road, they were matured in their music and stuff and what they would become. And still to this day, their music has never been outdated, and I've said this on shows before about the Beatles. They're going to be counted as the Beethovens and the Mozarts of the 20th century. That music is going to live on when we're all long off the earth in 2080. You're going to hear people talk about the Beatles just like John does for his class there. It's just amazing to me, and where you think of a group like the Ramones, I don't think they're going to be talking about them in 2080. So just for comparison, it's amazing to me.
What do you think, John, about this being their last album and knowing that, okay, any musician or anybody in the rock and roll world would give anything to have their talent and to be able to have the synergy that band had, but yet they knew that it was probably the end, where how many bands would do anything to keep it going? I mean, the Rolling Stones are still going. And it's like, I mean, sometimes I think about, well, it was just their time to fall apart. It was their time. Then I thought, well, man, I don't know. If what would you think if they were still together? But now you've got two of them that have passed away, and it's just, it's kind of good to think about maybe where they'd be if they were still playing. And here's the kicker. Do you think Paul and Ringo will ever make an album together before they move on
to
another plane?
Well, I got to bring this up, John. I got to bring this. This is Paul's dream, and John will talk about this too. He's talked to Julian Lennon. He's talked to George Harrison's son. One of Paul's last things he wants to do, even if it's just one song, he wants to bring in all the offsprings. I know this, and have Ringo there too. And I heard him talk about this on a radio interview. And he said if he could only do this once, he said, and John, me and you talked about this. There, I think what the sons are afraid of, the comparison of the fathers. Don't you guys think so?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I don't think
Danny thinks that. I think he's one of the guys that takes in that whole, my dad was the greatest, and I'm going to kind of bask in that. But I don't know. James McCartney, he's had a hard time getting his music out there. And so is Julian. Now, Sean's doing real good right now. He's got some good music out there with Claypool. But so what do you think of that? We're just got a few minutes left, John. What do you think of? Do you think if Paul and Ringo got together, they would? Do you think they would? They could sell out any place, any time.
Oh, easily. I mean, when we went and had that appearance on the last show of Paul's tour this summer, and Ringo came out unexpected, and it made national news. I mean, it was on your evening news. It was all over the place. So that tells me. If Ringo and Paul would tour with this Annie band, you're talking a major sellout wherever they would go. I don't think there's any question there.
I'll bring this up to you guys. Remember when Double Fantasy let up? The first guy that called up Paul McCartney was John Lennon, and he said, "I'm ready to write songs again." And this is my own. John always calls it my what if time. But if that assassin does not kill John Lennon, I think, guys, you would have seen a Beatle reunion in the 1980s, maybe not a tour, probably a new album, and with pay-per-view that time, you probably would have had the biggest pay-per-view. I think they would have done one big program, and because they were speaking at the time, and didn't Paul complimenting John, if I'm right on this, and called him up, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, about the album, yeah.
So they were talking, and John was wanting to write again, and I think, and George Harrison, I think George and Ringo would have jumped right in with him again, and it's always going to be that what if because of what happened, and he just, it would have been great to have seen that. That's all I can assess.
Yeah, do you think they would have gotten together, though? I mean, do you think they would have come together, as the song says, because there was a lot of tension there. And you guys know, it's hard sometimes to get together with somebody that you really don't want to be with.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah.
But John, maybe the old frictions would have ended. That you hope it don't. But you just wonder. It's just like I'll bring this up. Robert Plant will not play with Led Zeppelin again. No matter how much the money is, and when he turned down $600 million, and I don't know if you're right, John, JD, on this. I think old frictions, but I think the Beatles' love for each member, for each other, I think that would have overcome it because they was more mature by the 80s. I think they could have handled it. That's my opinion. I don't know what you guys think, but that's my opinion.
Well, John, what's your final thoughts on this? Because we just got a few more minutes left.
Okay. Well, my final thoughts is that with this album and the interview I was mentioning earlier with Lennon a couple of days after Abbey Road released in 1969, it's like looking behind the curtain. At the time, you hear him talking, and the main thing the reporter is getting on him about, it's not whether or not you're going to stay a band. It's like, will you guys ever tour again? You know, will you go back on the road? And John made a comment, well, you know, I wouldn't say never. It's always a possibility. Even though I think John knows I believe it's a couple of weeks later, he in a private meeting tells the other three Beatles, this is it for me. And of course, Paul's for one and went public. But John does not give a hint that he's thinking about leaving the Beatles in this interview. You would think that it was not their last album, that they might be going back in the studio. He doesn't even give a hint of that at all. So it's really interesting to go back and listen to it at that as far as the contemporary time. The other thing I want to point out is that I think one of the reasons that they felt comfortable touring more alone than as a group, I got a key clue in this interview when John talks about, oh, yeah, he goes, and we talked about this on our show we did about Eric Clapton. They put the band together for the Plastic Ono Band. They went to Toronto, and they played there in late 69. And it was Klaus Voormann, Eric Clapton, and, gosh, a guy named White. I want to say Alan White. And Lennon said, yeah, we tried to rehearse on the plane across the Atlantic, but it was so noisy, that didn't help. But he said, you know what was neat about it? He said there were no Beatle expectations. We could be who we are and do what we want. And if we made mistakes, that was okay. So I think they created this own kind of barrier that where they put themselves, or I should say people put them on a pedestal, that such high expectations of what a live show would be. I think that's why they were so reluctant and would never come back to doing a live concert. And, you know, you got the rooftop performance, but it really wasn't. It was live, but it wasn't like a paid concert. But I never, until I heard Lennon in that interview, I was like, wow, that's interesting, because he was fine with it just being some band called Plastic Ono Band, but he had no intention of going in as the Beatles.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, guys, I really had a great time talking tonight. Thank you so much for being on, and we definitely just want to keep this ball rolling. I have so much fun talking to you guys. Thank you so much. A great show tonight, and we're going to do another one soon. So
fun to work with you, John. I enjoy it.
Yeah, I do too. And I want to thank all the people that have kept this thing going for 11 years, and we really appreciate it. And everybody, you guys have a great evening, and everybody out there, love each other, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, John.